Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And we have so much to cover on Unspun today. Very serious off the top with happenings in the United States with a tragic plane crash in Washington, D.C. But wow, the reaction from the U.S. president. We're going to get into that. We'll talk about bank rates. We're going to talk about David Eby's plan to push back on Trump tariffs. And we'll get into some really hyper local municipal Metro Vancouver news. It's all coming at you on
Unspun. Okay.
It's a lot.
Well, I mean, it's Thursday and last night, terrible crash. There's not much we could talk about this. I just think that, you know, the reactions are over the top. Conspiracy theories already starting. Trump's react like, whatever. Like, we got to find out what happened. It's terrible. Looks like a terrible accident. Looks like human error. I don't know. What do we say? It's terrible.
This is when the art of the deal mentality that everybody keeps talking about with Trump doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Like, getting ahead of it and pushing back before. It's like,
nope.
This is an absolute tragedy. And by the way, it could happen to literally anybody, which is why I have such a fear of flying, even though every single day there are hundreds of thousands of planes in the air safely transporting people to and from, right? Like, yeah. But it's moments like these and watching that there's video of it. And, you know, like you said, George, the conspiracy theories need to stop for a minute so that we can do process and due diligence. So the families involved in this tragedy can find some solace in what has happened.
The only spin here is no spin. Stop.
No spin.
Stop.
Stop spinning.
Just do your investigation.
Let's put a pin in that. Let's just.
Yep.
Bank rates. Bank of Canada came out this week and cut rates again, as expected, by 25 basis points. We're down to 3% here in Canada. Interesting to note that the Federal Reserve in the U.S., froze theirs at 4.25% given the uncertainty of what Donald Trump is bringing to the table. So, yeah.
Interesting. And it's making money cheap up here. It creates all sorts of havoc. I think, and then there's, of course, the Commerce Secretary in the States saying, well, this first tariff is just a tariff related to the borders. There's another tariff we're working on that's coming in April. Like, what? What? Two tariffs? Okay.
I don't understand, George, and maybe you can help me with this. Like, tariffs, we know that a tariff is a tax. So the people of the United States are going to pay a tax on Canadian goods. So fewer Canadian goods might be purchased by Americans, which impacts Canadians. So both sides of the border get hit with that. So then we have our premier. We have so much politics in Canada we can talk about, but let's talk about BC. Mm-hmm. Premier David Eby steps up yesterday and says, we are creating a war room to deal with this. We got a number of ministers. I believe there are four ministers that are sitting in this war room to address the ongoing threat of tariffs from Donald Trump. So what does that look like here in Canada? And those tariffs that when people are like, yeah, let's tariff them back, it's a tax for you. And there are a lot of things that we buy that are American made, that actually have natural resources that we sell to the U.S. and then buy back. So it's a little bit more complicated than what some might be consuming. Like, this is going to leave a mark. I feel badly for our restaurant industry again, because also, George, you know, rounding up migrants in Bakersfield, California, which is like the breadbasket of California, like, prepare yourselves for the $70 avocado. Because there's no one to pick them.
And strawberries. And
all of it.
And it's, and. Yeah, I mean, not to say that we support illegal immigration and all that stuff, but, you know, if they had done the
migrant workers
in the first place, they wouldn't have this problem in America. Anyways, I'm not going to tell America how to do its job, but here we have in Canada, we have, you know, this, they're blaming us for fentanyl, they're blaming us for this or that. It's just a war room. I don't know what we can do. I mean, we know it's coming. It's happening. It's going to be probably Saturday. We're going to see this tariff happen. And we don't know what it is or how long it's going to last. It's all a big mystery. That's always great for economy. With friends like these, who needs enemies, right?
That's the part that just gets me, George. Like, to what end, really? Mm-hmm. What is the motivator to upend world order norms that democracies stick together and help one another. You know, I saw something float through my Twitter feed that was about, you know, Canada should join the EU. Like, oh God.
Okay.
That's what we're doing now.
Yeah. Or you see on TikTok the whole Commonwealth thing that's happening, which is interesting. So there are 900 million people in the Commonwealth, or 1.3 billion in the Commonwealth. It's like a lot because you include India in that, right? So it's huge. So that's interesting. But again, our closest neighbor is our closest supplier and customer. So it's going to hurt us, and we don't even know how it's going to hurt us. Obviously, I run a business. You run a business. We rely on clients and work. We have to go out there and hunt, and we eat what we kill. It's concerning. We just got through COVID and we're just getting back to normal, and now this happens and it sucks.
But I will tell you the one thing that I like David Eby said in his briefing at the end of his press availability was British Columbians didn't ask for this. We didn't do anything wrong here. It's like the elephant standing above the mouse saying, I'm going to crush you with my foot. Yeah. It's like, well, okay. You know, I guess we can run around for a bit, but
I feel like I feel like this tariff thing, the political parties have to come together. I know there's a leadership campaign happening, but I've seen some of the memes from the conservatives here in BC. They're going, you know, there's this, I feel like in this situation with the tariff, we need to come together as Canadians and deal with it like we dealt with COVID. As much as you might disagree with the COVID decision is, and I'll take you back in time to when we were all thought we were
5 years
die,
ago.
We all thought we were going to die.
Yeah.
I know maybe you didn't like the decisions that were made after the fact, but at the time, everybody think about it. And that's where we are right now with these tariffs. We are in a shit show, and we don't know what the future holds. And we don't have time for this politicization of this issue in Canada. We need to figure this out together to figure out what is the solution that will not only not destroy our economy, but potentially do what it needs to do to America to make them stop.
I'd like to see a methodical plan from governments of all levels to assess what we purchase and use and where it comes from at all levels, like in the health ministry. Right? Where do we buy our PPE? Is it coming from 3M in the United States, or are we buying it in a local Canadian company? Because we do make these things here. Sure, they're probably more expensive, but you know, it's like the difference between using I'm going to buy it on Amazon, or I'm going to go down to my local shop and look and see if it's there. It's time to local shop it. It's time to make, if everybody, and it sounds like a little tiny thing, but if we could as our leaders could, because they know the expenditures that are made, right? You know what is spent when you're sitting in City Hall and you're sitting in a council meeting. You know what the line items are and the RFPs, because you have to have a whole bunch of people who get to bid on it, and then you decide who's the best deal and whatever. Oftentimes, those were deals that were made with our trading partner in the US. You know, it's time to pivot.
On the product side, not the services side, but
product. Sure, I'm talking product. That's why I used, you know, masks as an example, because you brought up COVID, and that brought me to when we first were trying to acquire N95 masks when we didn't know what we were dealing with and we needed them, and they were in such high demand. Mm-hmm. The U.S. was like, we're going to actually keep these for us, because we were getting them from there. And now we've got, you know, that we did have a pivot 5 years ago to creating those, because remember the government had halted both the mask and vaccine industries in Canada prior to the pandemic. Unfortunate time.
So we had to produce our own vaccine.
But now we're doing it.
Yeah.
So, I hate to say it, but refineries, whatever, you know, when we're talking about pipelines, and it's got everybody's heads are exploding about it, but that's the natural resource.
I know. Ironically, most of the refineries in the States, a lot of them are owned by Canadian oil companies.
Right.
They sent it down there intentionally. It's business. And I think it's the supply chain that we don't know what's going to happen. You can say buy local, but there's so many little bits and parts, like the auto industry being the best example, where the governor in that state, which, like, they're going, this is like an open, like, we literally are going back and forth five times a day with stuff on one thing. Like, you know, this happens. This is not a, we're one already. This is to stop this is. and to
you'd wish crazy. The president knew that. I wish the president knew that, but he doesn't know. Everything, it seems, is on a whim. Everything, it seems, is like, my gut is telling me. It's like, okay, to our collective detriment.
Like when my clients tell me they wanted it, they have design ideas for ads or something, and I'll say, well, that's a nice idea, but what's the data show? Like, they'll say, well, I like I don't like your ads, and I'll say, but they're working. Yeah, but they're not. They don't meet our brand. And I'm like, but they're working.
But they're working.
So right. What do you want? You want more money? Or do you want the pretty look? Ads out? I mean, it's this, I don't feel like they're working. I mean, you feel that they are working. Here's the data. Like, look at the data. I have this conversation with clients all the time. Just look at the data, please.
Ad for Curve Communications, George Affleck, Curve Communications. What about Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his hearings to be installed as the head of it all, health-wise? Like this, I watched it all. I was riveted. I was like, this guy is getting it handed to him. Because there's no denying what he has been doing for decades.
I know. It's a mixed bag. Of course, we all know, but he denied the anti-vax thing. You know, there's two things. There's him.
He's written six books about anti-vaxxing.
Like, you got to change your diet, America. But, you know, there's also the whole removing themselves from the World Health Organization, you know, all the removing themselves from all the international organizations. The fact they're not letting their own health organizations.
CDC.
If anything's going to close our borders in Canada, it's going to be when there's a health nightmare down there, when everything goes crazy. And we're going to have to say, sorry, like during COVID, you can't come up to here. You guys are diseased. You can't come up here because you're not taking care of yourselves.
Yeah.
I think that's a more likely situation than potential tariffs. Far as us closing our borders, because at some point we have to say to ourselves, it's too risky to have them come up here.
Did you see that on, I think it was Global News, it might have been CBC, I'm not 100% sure, but there was like a Ring camera on somebody's house on Zero Avenue, and they showed where it's the truck putting down the planks, getting in the car, backing the truck up over the ditch, and then, of course, the five guys got caught by RCMP, and then they got arrested and returned, whatever. And then, but the people in the house were saying, I've lived here for X number of years, and typically it's been Canadians walking into the US, and it's now almost exclusively people coming north. Almost are exclusively.
Are they people from South America that are trying to get up here?
I think it's just people saying, I don't want to be in America.
Right. Yeah.
I don't want to be in America right now. It's scary right now.
It's a different location. If you go by Osuyus, there's lots of places you can cross that nobody will ever see you.
Well, there's that, Pacific Coast Trail. No, the Pacific.
That's right.
The PCT, or what it's called. You can walk all the way from Mexico all the way to the Canadian border, which used to be you could buy a permit, which kind of blows my mind. Right. You could just buy a permit and say you're a hiker. You couldn't get into the U.S. that way, but you could get into Canada that way. So that has now been changed. That was new this week that they said, actually, you need to go to one of these two border crossings, which I think is interesting because it's Abbotsford or a Soyuz. So if you're on foot, how exactly are you getting...
I need a car to get to my
pipe. I don't know. I don't know. Well, okay, anyway. should we come more local?
Yeah, I mean, I think, EB's got his war room, which is kind of a little bit local, and we'll see what happens. But again, I think if they're not all united across the country and all the parties aren't united, and he can't get the NDP and the Green Party together in a room, into that war room together, which clearly is not happening, then it's not really a war room. It's just a political party room to deal with how they're going to deal. And their majority is so slim you know, they really don't have the ability to.
But they started talking about not telegraphing everything that they plan to do, which I think I think they're listening to us. You just said Green Party, which reminded me, Sonia Firstuno.
Yes.
Yeah, stepped down as Green Party leader this week after an unbelievable career. This woman has been, you know, as we say, you know, thank you for your service, Sonia. What an incredible individual, what a speaker, what a passionate Green Party voice. You know, she is, I've had opportunity to speak with and also attend where Sonia does, you know, keynote speeches or has been a part of some of the lead up to election times where each leader is given an opportunity to speak. And she is really something else. And I think that her voice, hopefully she continues to lead in that lane in terms of what she believes in, because she's very, very, very good at getting her point across. And proof of that is having a spot with a party that barely is on the map for as long as she had.
took the risk to run a different riding and lost. And slowly handed over the reins to the new crew, but wish her the best. But meanwhile, what we need is a new leader in Metro Vancouver is what we need. Maybe she could
apply for a job. I want your take. Lay it all out for us, because you were going on a bit of a tear on the social media, yeah?
Yes, but I was. One of my biggest threads ever on Twitter or X last night.
Okay, I'm looking it up.
I mean, I've been saying this for a long time. You and I have talked about this many times. I've talked about Metro Vancouver and how the waste and the opaqueness. 90% of the decisions are made behind in closed doors and in camera meetings. I only attended probably 10 meetings in the time I was in office because the Vision didn't let me go to those meetings because they pay you extra. And I knew that. I think it was like $200 or $300 per day or something like that. It's once a month, you know, they meet. So it was, you know, I had no idea of all this other cash that these guys are getting. This was a complete surprise to even me. If you look back, you will see that I was the least spending and least paid counselor in my
time. I know that for a fact.
Intentional.
You've shown me the receipts.
Yes, the intention was I wanted to walk the walk of what I was saying. And certainly, and now Ken Sim saying he's going to boycott the meetings because of the mismanagement and all the grand the largesse and the feeding of the trough.
Because he didn't know about it before?
Sorry?
He didn't know about it before?
Yeah, of course
he didn't see it there before?
He only attended a quarter of the meetings anyway, so he kind of was boycotting. So Jordan Armstrong posted that, you know, does a story about that last night, that this guy, the mayor of Vancouver, is only attending a quarter of the meetings that it was. You already were boycotting. And so when you don't, just by not attending you send somebody in your stead. So you don't go, but somebody goes and gets paid, because I would fill in. That was always I was a backup. And they very seldom would miss the meeting because you don't get paid. If you don't go, you don't get paid. So Ken's not getting paid, but somebody's getting paid. They're not leaving that seat empty because it's really important votes that happen, millions and billions of dollars. It's a $2.6 billion budget. It's the biggest budget.
And sometimes more when it's a waste treatment plant in North End.
Well, yeah, and that's just one capital budget.
Right.
$3 billion.
But that's...
So my thread was really saying it's time, and I've said this before, that we need to have an elected Metro board. We cannot have these appointed people that are politicized, that are focused only on the needs of their own city. This is a board that's supposed to represent the region. We don't have, you know, many years ago, you may remember Toronto amalgamated and they created a big city.
Yeah, I lived there.
Unlikely to happen here. So the option is we have this Metro board, which has the biggest budget of the region. A lot of the decisions it makes cause local taxpayers a lot of money. The reason your water and your sewer is so expensive is because of Metro Vancouver's terrible management. So it's opaqueness, and it's who are these people and why are they making decisions without my authority as in a democracy? So it's time, if the province is going to do anything about Metro, it's time to create an elected board.
And if that means
amalgamation, and I don't know, but it's over, guys.
Have one council with representation from each of the townships or cities that sits on that board, and we start to shrink the councils in each city and take a whole layer of government out. And we start making decisions as the Greater Vancouver area, like the GTA, the Greater Toronto area, changed from Metro Toronto. Because I lived in Metro Toronto and then it became the Golden Horseshoe. It became the GTA. It's like now we're taking everybody into consideration as opposed to the one with the most money to spend or, you know, can sort of strategically create a space that, you know, protects them and sends the less the undesirables, I don't even know how to put it, over there. Like there's no over there, it's here. And you know, I look at what the reporting Jordan Armstrong and the gang at Global News, and full disclosure, I fill in and I've been a freelancer at Chorus for almost a decade now. So, I mean, I feel like they're my teammates. I don't collect a regular paycheck from Chorus, so take that for what you want. But I maintain that it is reporting like this. This is an example of if we do not support a free press, if we do not support the media that everybody uses like a negative, like a slur, a swear word, the media. The media exposed this. And if not for the hard work of investigative journalists, we wouldn't know about this. And it's important that we do know about it, right? Because there are people, all of them know. Like Jordan Armstrong put up video of taking a tour of the Metro Vancouver building. I don't blame the people that work at Metro. They didn't ask for it to be this opulent. But I do look at the people who approve the budget to make it that opulent with taxpayer dollars. Like, who did that? Who said it was okay?
I wasn't in the chamber. I remember when they made that decision, I wasn't in the meetings, of course, as I mentioned. And yeah. I thought, what is wrong with the building we're in? Like, what is wrong with this building? It's on Kingsway. They moved to, they bought an entire tower. They bought one of the towers at Metrotown. We own
put a restaurant in tower. It. You don't even have to.
So it's really just a question of EB making a decision about this. They talk about this and that. No, there's got to be restraint. No, he's got to create a thing. Like, no, it's a time to act. We need a regional mayor and a regional council, and they need to be voted in by the people of this region. And that's the only way it's going to fix it. And by the way, for anybody who sits on that metro board currently and who is from your town, You as a voter in the next election, which is a year and a half from now, you should look closely at those people, including Brad West, by the way, who has received one of the most amounts of largesse from this organization. Sorry, Brad. The shine is off your armor, and along with a lot of the people that you're on there with the Metro Board, because this is ridiculous. You've hidden this from all of us, including me, and I was in council and didn't know they were making all this kind of money. Maybe I'd stayed if I didn't know I'd known. Hey, I could have been rich.
No, you wouldn't have.
This is not cool. And so you as a voter, I'm speaking to all of us, we have a decision to make in the next council. If anybody, you find out who was sitting on that metro board that didn't tell us this and was taking all that money, and they need to be punished at the next election. And that includes almost every single ABC councillor and the mayor of Vancouver and most of the mayors in every city in this region. Make sure your vote counts. If EB doesn't fix this metro thing before the next election, then you can fix it by voting with your feet in your local elections and make it heard that this is not cool.
Yeah, that's the greatest power we all wield, is our municipal vote. And it always shocks us, and we've talked about it a million times here on Unspun. Only like 30% of eligible voters vote in a municipal election. And that is broken. Mm-hmm. That is broken. That's how you get people who are running the show by a majority, quote unquote majority, because it's a majority of people who vote. That's not a majority of the people. That's not the tax. Like, you need to be informed and invested, which is why you should tune in every Thursday and get a little bit of the top lines here from Unspun Podcast, right? What else did we want to get to here in Vancouver? Let's talk about the community, because you were talking about Ken Sim, and that's his way of sort of going, I hold no responsibility at Metro because I'm boycotting it now. But he's also at a time where we're, you know, if you've got any extra jackets or, you know, warm coats, blankets, clean, dry socks, drop them off at 144 East Hastings Street and try and help the people who are freezing living on the street. Like, the temperature's diving. We get snow coming in the weekend. It might even be a snow day in school next week. Who knows? And our mayor in Vancouver is talking about, well, you know, it's time for everybody else to step up. I'm like, oh God. We've been talking about this since we started the podcast. Oh my God.
I'm with him on that. But it's like, too little, too late, buddy.
But it has to start.
3 years. I've talked about this. You and I have talked about this. The downtown east side is not working. We all know that.
No.
But you know what the first thing they could have done when they got elected, and they knew this, and all of them know this, that the community plan that was put in place when I was in council, which was broken, a bad plan, no property development allowed, only social housing, concept.
Ghettoized.
Decision was they didn't do any community plans this council. There hasn't been a new community plan, like a local area plan. They've been focused on this citywide plan, which then got usurped anyways by the provincial government's decision on planning. So it's kind of pointless. But if you wanted to make a change to the downtown east side, you needed to go back to that plan, hire the right team. And there's a whole process. It takes 4 years to do a community plan. They would have started that plan. There would have been buy-in. Everybody could have got into this, and we could have talked about this issue with the region. Yes, the region still step up. I've talked about that the entire 7 years. I was sick and tired of Vancouver pulling its weight, way too much weight on the housing file. And certainly
we've talked about it. Yep. File.
And here we have now the mayor in his last year waking up and going, oh, downtown east side. Yeah, let's not. But that's not brave. That's just a spin. Talk about spin. You're just trying to save yourself. His polling, as we talked about last week, from what I've been told, is worse than Kennedy Stewart's was at this point before the next election. This guy is in dire straits and has likely no chance of winning the next election. And he's got knives in his back with his own. He can't even get the support of his own even as on this issue, his caucus were breaking away from him to separate themselves from this guy. He has no control of the city. He has no plan for the future of the city. He announces these things. I'm going to boycott this. We're going to do this thing in the downtown. It's so ad hoc and ungovernmental and unmanageable that it's creating more chaos in our city. And it's ridiculous. He had a super majority and he could have done so much and he just blew it. It's disappointing and terrible. And we're all, as the people who live in the city and in this region, see the repercussions of that every day.
There's such failure on every level on this file ongoing. You know, born and raised Vancouverite. There was a time that I remember going down to Woodward's with my grandmother on the bus, go to the Woodward's food floor, have a bite to eat, walk down Hastings Street, look at the shops, you know, go to the butcher. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd make a day of it. And I don't know, for people who are listening or watching, the last time you've been down there, I was down there day before yesterday dropping off coats and blankets. And obviously something needs to happen down there to help these people that are living in poverty and turmoil and, you know,
the whim of drug dealers.
It's
because we allow
Well, because self-medication is going on. There's people who are struggling with all levels of challenges, many by, you know, nothing that they have done in their lives. And that's the narrative that drives me crazy when you start opening up the phone lines on the radio station is everybody's like, well, they decided to do drugs. It's like, okay, no.
If anybody's ever met anybody with mental health care issues, it's not that simple. Yeah.
You know, but also, there's an argument for we need to spread it around the city. Well, the support services don't exist all over the city. So like you've said, since day one, four pillars, we need treatment, we need support, we need, I mean, there's people lining up just to get their prescriptions in emergency for because they don't have a GP. And there are news stories out now about, you know, people who are struggling like to the nth degree, 1 foot away from dying. And they sit in emergency room every single day. There's one individual who sits in St. Paul's Hospital emergency, has sat there for 150 straight days. Nowhere to go, can't do it, goes out, gets a fix, comes back in, sits there and tries to ask for help. And there's no help. There's no help. So it's like,
and it's so complicated to navigate.
It is. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. And I'm just so sick of it being.
No answer is not the answer. And that's what we're getting from the mayor. No plan is a plan. No plan is not a plan. And
so saying I'm not going to help until other people help. It's
not like, to have started that process 4 years ago to put a plan together for the downtown east side. Eight years ago was the worst thing that this city could have done. And so, because you need buy-in, you need partnerships, you need to talk about the
region, money.
You need to talk about the province. It's not about money, because the money's there. There's investment, there's development. If you allowed a combination of the private sector and the public sector to work together to solve these problems, and people go, oh, that's horrible. How dare you? Private sector's not going to help. Okay, they do help. I mean, the amount of generosity that comes from the private sector for not only downtown city, but everything. You just got to harness these things and work together. And there's no plan. There's no plan for the downtown east side. And now in his 11th hour, we got to make a plan. Okay, buddy, is that your re-election promise? You're going to solve homelessness next? Give me a break.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Especially when we're seeing the development that is happening, because it is happening. Like we're seeing buildings going up all over Vancouver. Like the city of Vancouver does not have a problem with development right now. Like that there are massive towers being completed and there's massive towers being planned. And because the pressure that the province is putting on the city to loosen up the purse strings on the, or the red tape on allowing things to be zoned for whatever. It's all so complicated. It's built to confuse the taxpayer. It's built to confuse the public. But all you need to do is look around for the first time in years. There are cranes everywhere in Vancouver. Used to be they were only in Burnaby and Richmond and Ladner and now and New West. And now they're in Vancouver. But people are starting to freak out about some of the 22-story buildings plan for the slope of Kitsilano, right? Because the loopholes of you can build, if you can build five, you can build 22, you know. And so now
on
it's
transit.
Like, oh, yeah. First in Cypress, 22-story building.
What? More supply equals cheaper rent. And that's the numbers we're seeing.
That's happening.
10% down already in Vancouver year over year. So we're looking at potentially another 10 or 20% decrease in rental rates, because decisions that were made 5 or 6 years ago for a lot of these towers that are across the region, not only in Vancouver but in Toronto, we're seeing are coming online now. It takes 5-6 years to build a building, these towers, which have 300 to 500 units in them. Toronto is 10, I think it was 30,000 units or something came online. It's huge amount.
Toronto went tower crazy downtown.
Well, it's supply though. So
it's supply. No, I get it.
I can't pay them more. I gotta rent this sucker out. I can't flip it. The plan was to flip it, and I can't rent it through the Airbnb. So I gotta rent it for whatever I can get, which turns out maybe less than my mortgage, but I'll take anything at this point. Yes, that's how it works. And now, so therefore, the price of rent goes down. And people who own a lot of places, my building is 25 years old. I would say 80% of the units here are owned outright. If the market crashed and these people had to rent their places they own outright for $800, they'd still be making money. So, you know, this is how the market works. And deny it over so many years, people saying supply has nothing to do with it. We are living proof right now that all the supply that was pushed through rental and strata over the last 10 years, even though Colleen Hardwick hated it all, guess what? It's starting to work. It's starting to work, and that's a good thing.
I agree with you on, frankly, you've brought me around. I will say you're right. I know you're right, because early days of this podcast, I was like, no, gentle density, it's possible, gentle density. And gentle density just was not being built. We got to the point where it's like $3,000 for a one-bedroom apartment to rent. There's nowhere to go. This is ridiculous. Shouldn't be a playground for the rich, like the ultra rich. It's crazy. And now we're seeing and at least I'm not a NIMBY. I know plenty of NIMBYs. There was a conversation with a group of friends that I was privy to the other night, where they were all talking about how crazy it is to find parking, and your parking permit's going to be $16,000 a year because they're not building parking, and the sky is falling, the sky is falling. I actually literally heard somebody I love and respect say, I don't like what's happening to our neighborhood. And I thought, oh God, you know what? Okay. I've got 5 new towers within 10 blocks of me. And I'm excited about what they're going to bring to the neighborhood. I'm excited about there being a London Drugs and a Fresh Street Market and new people living in the neighborhood and walking down the sidewalks. And, you know, instead of it being completely empty and there are people sleeping in every doorway, like we got to the point where it was literally just ghost town. Everybody, it seemed, moved from Kitsilano over to Main Street. I walk down Main Street and I'm like, this looks like Kits, right?
And towers, all the towers on Main Street. Oh my God. And the people fought that hard when I was.
That's why you brought me around. But as we cap off here, I'll say one more thing as we like to finish off with something community related. I'm sad to learn that the Vancouver Mural Festival is no more. The festival is no more. And that's unfortunate, because I love the Mural Festival. I love the footprint it leaves in its legacy, the art that has been created on some buildings that really needed a facelift. I think that's sad. I think there should be a way to find
good job, City. You did it again.
I know. It's just like, come on.
What is Ken?
Why don't we take all the proceeds?
More mojo. What's the word he always uses? Kenzin. He wants his. Anyways, well, no fun.
World class city.
All that stuff. Whatever. Yeah. It's like, come on. It's all about the policing costs at the end of the day. That's what kills all these festivals. Yep. Because, you know, you need a lot of police for that mural festival. It's all those troublemakers painting on walls.
Literally. Oh, my goodness. Okay, we got to go. On social media, you can be found on your X. No, Twitter. It's Twitter. We're sticking to it. It's at George
_
Affleck. At George _ Affleck. But on the blue sky and everywhere else, you're just George Affleck. No underscore required. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance. Not sure what we're doing next week in terms of timing on the podcast for the next couple of weeks, because I'm doing Invictus Games. Right. Make sure you tune in to TSN 11 p.m. nightly starting on February 8th. I'll be doing the daily show for Invictus Games to wrap up the games. And it repeats every morning at 10 a.m. on the network nationally. Opening ceremonies 1:00.
I like the sound of that. The Daily Show with Jody Vance.
The Daily Show with Jody Vance and JJ Chalmers and Jonathan Edwards. It's going to be all the J's on the show. Anyway, see you later, George.
Bye.